WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The work of counting mail-in ballots continues in Montgomery County today. The county is the only one still counting, according to the elections deputy minister with the Maryland Board of Elections. The race for the Democratic candidate for Montgomery County County Executive remains close. After yesterday's count, businessman David Blair is now 131 votes ahead of incumbent Mark Elrich. So far, the Montgomery County Board of Elections says it's counted more than 54,000 mail-in ballots. Bail is denied for a woman accused of shooting her husband at the Mandarin Hotel in D.C. last week after she says he molested kids who went to the daycare she owns. Here's Sam Ford with 7 News.
Maryland daycare owner Shantiri Weems and her husband James Weems both in D.C. jail today. Her lawyer today.
She was confronted by a mother who was distraught, who was upset, whom she had known for many years, that her son had been molested and that Jay did it.
He says when she drove from Baltimore to the D.C. hotel,
he came at her and she had to defend herself.
But police had found Shantiri's notebook entry, "I'm on the way to shoot James. I do not intend to kill him. I intend to paralyze him."
The judge said she's a danger to society. Her husband is charged with molesting 3 kids at her daycare. Another violent night in the district. D.C. police say 6 people were shot and injured in 3 separate shootings that happened in Southeast, Southwest, and Northeast. Police tell the Washington Post they don't think the shootings are related. Some more bad news out of Eastern Kentucky, where at least 16 people were killed in floods that the governor says are the worst he's ever seen in the state. Floodwater destroyed homes, closed roads, and caused mudslides. Meteorologist William Churchill of the National Weather Service.
So those areas that experience that significant flooding should just be prepared for, rainfall amounts on the order of maybe 1 to 2 or even 3 inches locally come late Sunday into Monday.
Parts of eastern Kentucky got up to 10 inches of rain over 48 hours this past week. Police in the city of Fairfax are warning about a fake ticket scam.
They look real, bearing the seal of the city of Fairfax. But police say fake tickets have popped up on the Turo app, used to rent cars directly from owners. One of the tickets cited blocking a fire hydrant with a $300 fee and threats of booting, towing, and wage garnishment. Police are investigating the fraudulent ticket scam, and they're asking anyone who's used a Turo app and gotten one to give them a call. Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
We have the winning numbers from last night's Mega Millions jackpot, but this morning there's no word on whether anyone had those numbers and won that $1.28 billion.
This latest Mega Millions jackpot sparked a lot of dreams for people across the country, many of them with generous ambitions.
I personally would make donations to charities.
So I'd invest like over 80%.
Certain people I love, I give them a million or something, but for the most part, I'm give it all away.
A long stretch without a jackpot winner plus lotto fever pushed the grand prize to its staggering sum. Even the cash option would make a winner a multimillionaire. Carmen Roberts, Fox News.
WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Cardinals. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Earlier work done on the outer loop of the Beltway between the GW Parkway and the Georgetown Pike now cleared. So the delays from Cabin John headed towards the Georgetown Pike, those delays are easing now. Traffic should be back up at speed. You will still find accident activity in Great Falls and Fairfax. The Georgetown Pike is still affected in each direction near Old Georgetown Court. Watch out for lane closures there. Keep in mind that in Silver Spring and in Tacoma Park, a portion of the Sligo Creek Parkway closed for weekend recreation. North and southbound between Forest Glen Road and University Boulevard and between Old Carroll Avenue and Piney Branch Road. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy today, much nicer conditions through the afternoon, lower humidity, high temperatures today in the mid to upper 80s. Later on tonight, lows back in the 60s and 70s. Fair amount of clouds on your Sunday. We'll have the chance for some isolated showers, a best chance through the afternoon, south and west of D.C., high temperatures into the mid 80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
72 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update. Hour two of the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler, John Gizzi with us each week, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Interesting fireworks in Washington this week, post-July 4th. It was actually former President Trump, former Vice President Mike Pence, dueling speeches, and it was former President Trump's first visit back to Washington since leaving?
It certainly was. And Trump clearly stole the show. The attention was on his hour and 20-minute address at the America First Foundation, made up of alumni of the Trump administration. There were numerous members of Congress there, several figures in politics around the country came, and Trump did not disappoint. He focused on law and order, describing grisly crimes that have occurred under the watch of his successor, Joe Biden. He talked about how safe the border was when he was president and said Russia would never have attacked Ukraine had he been in the Oval Office rather than his successor. It was quite a speech, and he even weighed in on women's sports, doing a pantomime of a woman athlete weightlifting and someone with a man's body coming in to weightlift and beating her. One had to see that this was a virtuoso performance for Donald Trump, but it fueled the talk that he would run again in 2024. Meanwhile, across town, Mike Pence, former vice president, spoke to the Young Americans for Freedom Conference. He gave a sober look at how the economy looked, how the world was safe when the Trump-Pence administration, his term, was in power. He also took a bit of a whack at his former ticket mate, saying, "We cannot look to the past, but for the future," which is shorthand for Biden won the last election, a heresy among Trump supporters. The conclusion among any of my colleagues who were there was that Mike Pence will get into the presidential race and he will run as an anti-Trump alternative. So far, the two have clashed in Republican gubernatorial primaries, backing different candidates, and Mike Pence has a book coming out just describing what happened on January 6th. Its title, So Help Me God.
The president had a conversation with President Xi Jinping of China. How did that go?
The White House gave a very placid account of the 167-minute session that the two had. The fact is that the president said he told President Xi that the United States was committed to the status quo in the Pacific. In other words, two Chinas, although he would never use the term, and that Taiwan's sovereignty would be protected, although he never committed to sending in troops. Now, if you read the Chinese account, it was a much more severe and hard-hitting version of the exchange between the two world leaders. Simply put, President Xi told President Biden that people who play with fire often get burned, and that's almost an exact quote. Certainly, the stakes on this and the tension between Beijing and Washington was raised by the planned visit next week of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Taiwan. She's the highest U.S. official in 25 years to visit the island nation that lives in fear of China. And I can say that the Taiwanese office in Washington is saying nothing, but Taiwanese universally are saying, "Bravo, Pelosi."
So she wants to go, but President Biden doesn't want her to go, so he's siding with the Chinese on this one.
Exactly, and he's exacerbating the situation. I find it interesting to hear conservatives, who normally don't have a kind word about the Speaker of the House, urging her not to cave into pressure from the White House, but to go. And again, her presence in Taiwan is something that will possibly require massive security, and even U.S. fighter jets out of fear of an attack. China has made it very clear it doesn't approve and that there would be retribution for this. What they mean by that is unclear. For her part, Nancy Pelosi is standing firm with Taiwan for now.
We've seen Congressman Liz Cheney from Wyoming leading the charge against President Trump in the January 6th hearings. Headline that you wrote at Newsmax.com, Cheney's plea to Democratic crossovers blasted by Republicans. What did she say?
After saying she would never encourage crossover voting, a few weeks ago, Congressman Cheney said she was calling on Democrats to come in to change their registration and to vote for her. This is something that is legally permitted in Wyoming. That's right. If you go in that day and declare yourself a Republican, you get a Republican ballot, even if you are a lifelong Democrat or independent. Now, it would take 18,000 Democratic crossovers to probably make Liz Cheney competitive. Most recent polls say that she's trailing by as many as 20 points conservative opponent Harriet Hageman, who, by the way, has the endorsement not only of Donald Trump, but of 200 sitting Republican House members. Again, can she do it by August 19th and pull off an upset? $9 million, that's what's in the Cheney kitty, can convince a lot of people. Most Republicans in Wyoming say she's doomed.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, as always, thank you very much. 7:18 Saturday morning update. We'll talk to Gordon Chang next. But first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Still an accident to watch out for in Great Falls on the Georgetown Pike near Old Georgetown Court. All lanes are blocked due to the incident, so follow police direction there. Earlier roadwork on the outer loop near the GW Parkway cleared away, and looks like the delays have eased on the outer loop from the Legion Bridge heading into towards Virginia towards the Georgetown Pike. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Sunshine is returning on this Saturday. Also, lower humidity in the wake of yesterday's cold front. Highs today in the mid to upper 80s. It'll be a very comfortable afternoon ahead of us. Later on tonight, partly cloudy. Lows back in the 60s to low 70s as we head towards your Sunday. The humidity will return. Also, the chance for some late-day storms, mainly south and west of D.C. Highs on Sunday into the mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
71 degrees in the nation's capital, 719, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Gordon Chang. He's the renowned expert on China. His latest book, The Great U.S.-China Tech War. Gordon, thanks for being back with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Rick.
Gordon, been following you on Twitter, at Gordon G. Chang, and watching the rhetoric coming out of China, all in regard to Speaker Pelosi's trip. Now, you and I have talked over the years about China and sometimes the bluster that China puts out. Is this all just idle rhetoric, or is there a threat here?
I think there's a real threat, Rick. There's a couple things. What China will do is dependent on what they think Biden will or will not do. And if they perceive him to be weak, which they do, they could very well make good on their threats. Also, we have to remember there's always the possibility of an accident. China said that it was going to escort Speaker Pelosi's plane as it approached Taiwan. You could very well have some sort of accident there. I'd be very concerned about what's going on. One other thing. This may not be about Pelosi and Taiwan. We know that China yesterday put 4 warships into Japanese territorial water around the Senkakus in the East China Sea. There are today troops below the line of actual control in Indian-controlled territory in Ladakh in the Himalayas. They provoked a major incident in the South China Sea last month against the Philippines at Second Thomas Shoal. This is a China that is lashing out, that wants to break apart neighbors. It really wants to cause a provocation. We've got to be extremely concerned what will happen with Speaker Pelosi.
And the USS Ronald Reagan has made some moves in that region as well.
Yes, but that was regularly scheduled. A carrier strike group's moves, except in wartime, are going to be announced beforehand. These were, everyone knew that the Reagan was going to be in the South China Sea. But this is a happy coincidence for us because it means that the United States can protect the speaker's plane if she goes to Taiwan.
So after the phone conversation between the two leaders, rhetoric out like, quote, the U.S. was playing with fire and the threat of a, quote, firm and absolute response if Speaker Pelosi visits Taiwan. What is your sense of what actually happened on that phone call? The Chinese readout is a lot different than the White House readout.
Well, the Chinese readout actually threatens to kill President Biden, if you read it. And I think that President Biden should have hung up the phone immediately after hearing any sort of threat like that. This is, you know, even if it's Chinese bluster, it was incumbent on the President of the United States to counter it with his readout, which he really did not. This shows the Chinese that they can do what they want, that Biden is afraid of them. And that, I think, aggravates the situation. I'm not saying that the President of the United States intended to make this worse, but that's, in effect, what he did. And he's been doing that for quite some time because last Wednesday, you go back Wednesday last week, when Biden spoke to reporters offhand saying, oh, you know, the U.S. military doesn't think it's a good idea that Speaker Pelosi go, what he did was signal to the Chinese that there was disagreement inside his administration, and we can trace that Chinese rhetoric became even more dire sounding because the Chinese realized that they could probably intimidate the administration, and so therefore they tried to do that. So through some very, unintended but certainly misguided tactics, Biden has made the situation worse.
China and Mexico were center stage in a Senate hearing on the spike in fentanyl across the United States. Give us a little background on the role that China is playing in fentanyl here.
Yeah. The fentanyl gangs are large and far-flung. They're international. They use the Chinese state banking system. In a near-total surveillance state, nobody could engage in that type of activity without the approval of the Communist Party. American presidents, not just Biden, who's guilty of this, but also Trump and Trump's predecessor, Obama, knew what was going on and did not call out the Communist Party for it. They said, oh, you know, let's try to work with China. But we got to realize China has wanted these fentanyl deaths, and in fact, every fentanyl death in the United States should be considered a murder, and we've got three American presidents who have not defended and not protected our country. American people ought to be outraged at the Chinese for this, but they also ought to be outraged at the people that they elected who are not protecting them.
And some legislators have been sounding alarms about Chinese real estate purchases and their increasing portfolio in the United States. One was near a U.S. military installation. What's your sense of what the Chinese are doing there?
Yeah. People are now focusing on Grand Forks, where a Chinese food processing company, Fufeng Group of Shandong Province, bought 300 acres this year and wants to put up a corn milling plant. That's within 12 miles of Grand Forks Air Force Base, where we have sensitive satellite uplink facilities and where we control many of our drones. Fufeng only needs to put a passive listening device there. It would be very hard to detect. A mustered-out Chinese officer has bought a lot of acreage near Laughlin Air Force Base. You know, we have this pattern, this is our country. We should be forcing these Chinese parties to sell their land. And I believe that China should not be allowed to buy American farm or ranch land until we figure out what's going, because there are other malicious activities going on Chinese-bought American land these days.
Gordon Chang with us this morning on the Saturday Morning Update. Gordon, thank you so much for your insight.
Thank you, Rick. I really appreciate it.
And remember, you can keep up with Gordon on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang. 7:26, it is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAO. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up after the 7:30 news. And, of course, check in with Katie McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A woman charged with assault with intent to kill after police say she shot and hurt her husband at the Mandarin Hotel in D.C. last week remains behind bars this morning. Shantiri Weems of Maryland was denied bail. She claims she shot her husband James because he molested kids who went to her daycare. Her lawyer, Tony Garcia, argued it was self-defense. A judge says she's a danger to society. Garcia disagrees.
Miss Weems has never been arrested. No traffic, no DUIs.
James Weems, also in jail this morning, faces charges of molesting three kids. A bill that would make it illegal to import, sell, or manufacture a long list of semi-automatic weapons passes in the House yesterday. If you already have a semi-automatic weapon, the bill would allow you to keep it legally. Fox's Chad Pergram.
It's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. This is really a House vote here. They don't have 60 votes in the Senate, but they wanted to get members of Congress from both sides on the record about this before the midterms.
Democratic Congressman Jim McGovern says it's about ensuring kids have the right to not get shot in school, like the 19 who were slaughtered in the Robb Elementary School. Republican Congressman Andrew Clyde voted against it, saying an armed America is a safe and free America. The race for the Democratic candidate for Montgomery County Executive remains neck and neck as the county continues counting mail-in ballots today. After yesterday's count, businessman David Blair is now 131 votes ahead of incumbent Mark Elrich. All of the other counties in Maryland have sent their primary results to the Maryland Board of Elections, according to the deputy administrator. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Cardinals. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In the district, a portion of Benning Road is closed east and westbound between Minnesota Avenue and East Capitol Street for the Open Streets event, so do keep that in mind. Also, you will still find a portion of the Georgetown Pike closed near Old Georgetown Court due to longstanding accident cleanup activity taking place in the area. Also, in Arlington, West Glebe Road is closed eastbound between South 4 Mile Run Drive and Valley Drive due to bridge repairs taking place through the area. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy today, much nicer conditions through the afternoon, lower humidity, high temperatures today in the mid to upper 80s. Later on tonight, lows back in the 60s and 70s. Fair amount of clouds on your Sunday. We'll have the chance for some isolated showers. A best chance through the afternoon, south and west of D.C., high temperatures into the mid 80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
72 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
7:35, the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is with us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. He is a former intel operative trained by the CIA, and he is the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
We just talked with Gordon Chang about sort of what's been going on with the politics of President Biden and President Xi of China, the rhetoric, and how serious that rhetoric is. What strikes you over the past, let's say, 72 hours about the relationship with China and the U.S.? What troubles you and what strikes you?
Well, I think it's clearly a game of propaganda at this point. I just don't see that the PRC, the People's Republic of China, the communists, are going to be able to do much because of their own internal challenges. They, you know, people tend to not track exactly what's going on within the interior, but, you know, they've got their own issues with their own party. They've got a number of resource issues they're dealing with and economic issues. So as much as I think it's interesting and almost humorous that they would threaten Nancy Pelosi, I think it's been in the news documented fairly clearly that they threatened to shoot her airplane down. And I look at that with a sense of irony. It's like, you know, I don't know if you all know what you think you're doing, but that's not going to get you what you think. And plus, that threat is pretty much empty. There's no way they're going to shoot down the Speaker of the House of Representatives over Taiwan, especially at this point when they're not ready to take any military action. So I think there's a lot of bluster there, but it should remind us that China is a growing and direct threat to peace. I think they will eventually, because of their system of governance and stated nationalistic desires to increase their dominance within the Pacific Rim, especially over Taiwan. There's a really good chance that they're going to do something militarily next year at some point. And I would argue they're looking at doing that because they're going to try to take advantage of the Biden administration one way or another before 2024. So I think next year is a really good chance they're going to try to really expand out and do something militarily after they get their own house in order inside of their own borders.
So, Tony, the U.S. House of Representatives on Friday, late yesterday, passing legislation banning assault-style rifles. Now, that's in the House. It will go to the Senate next, likely be defeated in the Senate, but that's no guarantee. You have just written an op-ed in the Washington Times, came out on Thursday. The headline on it, "We need to fight crime, not the right to bear arms. The gun control lobby is missing common sense." Well, Tony, what is it they're missing? You know, kind of open up on it and tell those on the gun control lobby that are listening this morning what they're missing.
So 3 points. First, I'm completely appalled continually that the left continues to use a Nazi term to support their position. The term assault weapon, assault rifle, does not exist within the military lexicon of any military I've ever served in. This term comes from the term that Hitler came up with, Sturmgewehr, storm weapon, assault weapon, and the fact that they continue to use it just appalls me that they do not understand the history. So a party supposedly committed to not using racist language uses something that's totally horrific for the image of what they're doing. Secondly, to that point, there's no such thing as an assault weapon within the context of modern rifles. You have rifles which have military features, according to them, a pistol grip, which is a common element of most of modern rifles, is quote-unquote a military feature. The way they continue to misportray the weapon, AR, AR itself is an armalite weapon, not an assault rifle, is something that they continue to do and misrepresent and falsely accuse individuals of having weapons of war. It's just not true. And third and most importantly, the very weapons they're trying to ban are not the weapons which are used most prominently in attacks. We're talking about in Chicago small pistols being used, mostly 9mm, every weekend for mass, quote-unquote, mass shootings. More people die from shovels purchased at hardware stores die every year than from these so-called assault weapons. So that's how badly misrepresented the issue is through their efforts. And simply put, Rick, the more they focus on trying to ban features and go after gun owners who are legal, law-abiding citizens, the more they distract and prohibit the ability to use resources and policies to stop real crimes. And I have to only conclude then that they want the crime, they want the distraction, and they don't want to resolve the real issues which plague U.S. cities, which is the culture of violence, not the technology which is used to perpetrate the violence.
I want to turn to the U.S. Army recruiting issues. We're hearing the reports that they're having problems in recruitment.
Yeah.
You being Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, obviously you were in the Army and you went through Army training. Tell us a little bit about the problem. What is the problem and what is causing the problem?
So I went through basic training in 1981 as a private E2. And it was a seven-week course, which really put you through a lot. I went through in Fort Gordon, Georgia. It was something that was required to essentially prepare one for service, give you skills and a certain level of physical training. Rick, today, the military has a hard time finding individuals who even can match up and join based on physical fitness requirements prior to the joining. Only about 26% of the population we're talking about, 17 to 25, actually are not obese, which is a frightening feature of society. I think that comes from both people not having physical fitness as part of their everyday routines. This especially is true in a lot of schools, and kids kind of going and playing games all day. And I have a son that does the same thing at 15. He's, you know, does far too much of that. Second issue is psychotropic drugs. A lot of teachers don't like dealing with spirited kids. One of the ways they divert kids who they don't want to have to deal with is put them on a track. And parents allow this to happen too. Put them on a track to get them on some sort of a drug. And I think that has also caused a real problem with people being available, because once you're on a psychotropic drug, that limits your ability to serve. Plus, the issue of service. I think there's been a real attack on institutions such as the military and police by the left, which has removed any idea that serving in the military is a good thing. There's no promotion of the military for purposes of service to one's country, service to something greater than themselves. And I think these things altogether have really harmed the Army's ability to bring new people into its ranks. And I think the more we see this attack on institutions by the left and these other features of lack of fitness and drugs, we're going to continue to see this problem increase over the next few years. So I think the Army has to really reinvent how it approaches kids and looks at its own equities on how it can draw people in for purposes of replenishing the ranks, especially since we're going to go into a time of great challenge with other nations potentially as adversaries such as China, and potentially problems in the European theater.
And what would you suggest in terms of the recruiting message? There have been stories and reports out there about the woke recruiting messaging now. It's different than it used to be. What are your thoughts on that? What would you say to Pentagon leadership about how to recruit?
Well, the woke isn't working. It never works. And I think the more they try to draw people in by saying you can be a boy or a girl and have a sex change, they need to go back to basics and reinforce the fact that we have a republic that was created 240 years ago that is worth saving and worth investing in. And I think look at how well Top Gun Maverick's done. That should be a big clue to the military on what really will draw people in to military service. Not trying to put people in high heels to make them all feel, know how it feels to walk around as a woman. Those things don't work. They're not going to work. So they've got to take a page from the past, create an attitude as well as benefits. And there's ways of incentivizing things as bonuses. Look, I joined the Ohio Army National Guard. They paid for 4 years of college for me. That was a great benefit. They need to go and incentivize and revise how they approach kids. I think kids want to be patriots. They ought to give them that opportunity.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, the Thought to Action podcast available to you at londoncenter.org. And what's on the topic this week?
So we're going through and talking about some of the issues in the headlines regarding gun control, regarding service. We were talking about Uvalde and some of the issues that resulted in that tragedy, going back and being traced to problems with training and an attitude of police officers. So I think people will enjoy that.
Tony, thank you so much. Again, it's londoncenter.org. 7:46, Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll head over to the WMAL Traffic Center, talk to Michelle Murray, then we're back with KT McFarland.
I'm slow going traffic right now, traveling on 95 southbound from Woodbridge to the Prince William Parkway and from Dumfries towards Quantico. More delays southbound from Garrisonville Aquia heading towards the Centerport Parkway. In Durwood, watch out for crash activity affecting the eastbound lanes of Norbeck Road at Emery Lane, Belpre Road. All lanes of eastbound Norbeck Road are closed at Belpre Road as a result of this collision. Now, one lane of westbound Norbeck Road is open at this time, but watch out for very slow traffic there as well. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Sunshine is returning on this Saturday. Also, lower humidity in the wake of yesterday's cold front. Highs today in the mid to upper 80s. It'll be a very comfortable afternoon ahead of us. Later on tonight, partly cloudy. Lows back in the 60s to low 70s as we head towards your Sunday. The humidity will return. Also, the chance for some late-day storms, mainly south and west of D.C. Highs on Sunday into the mid-80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
72 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47 on the Saturday morning update. 7:50, this is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, board member of the American Conservative Union, and the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and we the people. KT, always an honor to have you with us.
Honor and a pleasure.
Thank you. Well, you know, people travel in the summer and they get outside the Beltway and they may spend a day or two or a week in one of the states, somewhere around the country. You're away from Washington. You're away from everything, the machinations on Capitol Hill, the sprawling government and the machinery of government. You travel a lot. I know you get around the country. You spent a lot of time in Florida in the past year. And I think it's interesting, you know, to contrast what it's like around Washington, the management of the federal government and even D.C., because it's under federal jurisdiction in some areas of what they do, and contrast that with what's going on at the state levels.
Okay, well, let me just give you my last week and my two visions. So we live permanently on Eastern Long Island in the Hamptons. Very nice place to live. I also spend a lot of time in Florida, another nice place to live. In this last week, a number of politicians, as is normally the course in every summer, show up in the Hamptons to fundraise and meet rich people who are on vacation in the Hamptons. Nothing unusual about that. The problem is the Vice President Harris, decided to come to the Hamptons this week. But she did it in the most horrible, egregious way for everyone who lives in the Hamptons. Instead of flying in on a helicopter and flying back out, she decided to motorcade. And so the motorcade blocked the traffic on the one. There is one highway, one two-lane highway that goes all through the Hamptons. If there's an accident on that highway or if a car breaks down, there's a big traffic jam. So what does she do? Her people stopped the traffic on the highway for several hours, and they did it during rush hour. So all of a sudden, you have the vice president going to whatever event she was going to. Meanwhile, you had school buses that were stuck in traffic for 2 hours. They couldn't move. Workers who were trying to get back from Eastern Long Island to Central Long Island, they couldn't move. People who were trying to go to meetings or events, they were stuck on the highway because there's no alternate route. And to me, it was just such an emblem of how big government screws it up. They don't really care about the inconvenience they're causing to the local people. It's just they need to get around. They need to get around and do their events. And why they didn't take a helicopter, well, who knows? I guess they didn't think that would be as much fun. You know, I know it sounds like rich people's problems to say, well, we were all stuck in traffic for 2 hours. But if you've got a little five-year-old kid who needs to go to the bathroom and you're stuck in traffic for 2 hours when it should be a six-minute drive, that's a big problem in your home. Now, it just looks to me like, again, it's an example of the Biden administration seems to have unintended consequences for every one of their acts. They never seem to think it through, whether it's as the helicopter versus the cars for the vice president or the Afghan withdrawal. They didn't think through what would happen next, of the collapse of Afghanistan, of trillions of dollars of weapons getting into the hands of the Taliban. Biden's war on fossil fuels on day number one. They didn't think through that the absence of American fossil fuels on the market would lead to massive inflation and massive shortages and potentially a worldwide crisis. But they went ahead and did their first thing anyway, not understanding what would happen next. They locked down the country for months and months and months, not understanding that it would hurt the economy. They made kids wear masks for months and months and months and months, not understanding that kids who were wearing masks and weren't going to school were going to have mental health issues from it. So now we're left with all these problems, with a recession, with the mental health issues of the children. And what does the Biden administration do? Well, they redefine recession. They said, well, it's not really a recession. When anybody who goes to the grocery store knows they're paying 30 or 40% more for groceries than they did a year ago. So who are you fooling? And then when people, even if when they admit it's a recession, they say, well, it's not our fault, not our fault, somebody else's fault. So here you have the federal government of the United States, whether it's Kamala Harris's motorcade or Afghan withdrawal or COVID restrictions and lockdowns, or the crisis in energy, and it's never their fault. They don't, and they then therefore think they don't have to do anything about it. Now let's compare that to the state of Florida. Florida, lean government, small. It's not a full-time legislature, dollar for dollar. It's a much, much, much smaller bureaucracy in federal government. So I was with a reception with the First Lady of Florida, Casey DeSantis, yesterday. And she was describing the child services in Florida, that when they went into the governor's mansion, her husband was doing all the stuff he was doing, you know, COVID, et cetera, et cetera. And she said that she, a mother of three little kids under five, said, well, the child services part of Florida's government doesn't seem to be really working. It's a labyrinth of programs, hard to navigate, and yet with COVID and the looming recession, more need than ever for it. So they figured out that, in fact, Florida had plenty of resources, whether they were in the faith-based community or private, not-for-profit, or in some cases government. All they needed was an ombudsman to match people with programs. So they did a simple solution. Casey DeSantis created a portal where anybody could go and say, here's my problem. You know, my rent's too high. I'm not getting my welfare check. My kid's school is having a problem. Whatever their problem was in child services and human services, they would then be directed to the right program, government program, faith-based program, whatever. And it turned out they solved the problem in less than a year. It's now being hailed as the greatest sort of example of how government works, and it didn't cost any money. In fact, it saved money because the problems that people had were dealt with immediately and did not become festering problems. So I look at that and I think, whoa, here's a state which said, okay, we've inherited a problem, how do we fix it? And a federal government with massive resources creating problems and then blaming them on somebody else. I mean, no wonder the country wants a change.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because if you look at a lot of the leadership, the people running the economy in the White House, I don't know how many of them have ever run a business or even been in business. You have people who are coming out of academia, or they've been in politics their entire life and don't know bottom lines when it comes to running a company. So what do? You just spend more money because you're the federal government and you can do that. You can spend as much money as you want. The inefficiency.
And not worry about the consequence. No, I think this is one of the big things that people inside they just don't. It's like they're colorblind to the problem the rest of the country faces. Because Washington, if you're in Washington and you have a government job, you can't be fired. Doesn't matter what the economy is. Like you said, just tax more money. If you're driving on Washington streets or roads, don't worry about it. They're government subsidized. There are always no potholes there. Plenty of good access. There's good access to public transportation, again, subsidized by the federal government. If you're working in the federal government, don't worry about inflation because you'll have a cost of living increase. Don't worry about health care because, you know, you have pretty darn good health care. Don't worry about retirement because you've got terrific retirement benefits. And your food is even subsidized in the government cafeterias. So it's almost like something out of the Hunger Games, where the capital is living wonderfully well, and wonderfully well and completely unconnected to what's happening in the other parts of the country. And in the Hunger Games TV series and books, eventually the people in the rest of the country rebel. Well, I think it's going to happen in the United States, but thank goodness our founding fathers gave us the ability to rebel at the ballot box, and that's why what is coming in November will be a major, major earthquake politically in the United States, and it's about time.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, thank you so much as always.
Thank you.
And that is it for the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us. Garden Sense will follow the 8 o'clock news.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.